Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to the Unashamed podcast, Unashamed with Phil Robertson. We got Al, we got Jace today. Got a really great episode for you, talking a lot about the Tower of Babel, the state of Indiana, how much we like it, and some of the people from there. Jace has got some interesting tales, as always. You know, when Jace goes on the road, he's always going to come back with a tale, and he's got one today, which I think you'll like. We talked about basically the origins of language. Really interesting. Where did languages come from? And of course, we have a biblical answer for that. But a lot of people wonder. It's a lot of mystery. So glad you tuned in today. Hope you enjoy it. Let us know what you think. So today we're talking about TacPack, which is the premier monthly subscription for military, tactical, and Second Amendment enthusiasts. Now, we're pro-military, even though none of us had the opportunity to serve, although Si did. I'd say we're tactical, just basically we live that way, and we're certainly Second Amendment enthusiasts. So this is something that we can get behind. What they basically do is for $49.95 a month, they're going to ship you at least $100 worth of gear. 5.11, Mission First Tactical, American Grip, a lot of really great products. They ship out AR-15 parts, which would be good for you, Dad.
Yeah.
Because you have at least, how many ARs you have now?
Couple.
And they're usually handy, I noticed.
One under my belt and one's about 3 feet from my hand right now.
So
one under the bed, really? One under this table.
And your Bible. So you're well armed.
My Bible in the middle. So,
basically,
we want Bible studies with people. We've got two people visiting us today. They've come all the way down here to be baptized. It's a great thing, a wonderful thing. We meet them with a little food and Bibles. That's what we want to do.
Right.
But we live in a violent culture. There's no doubt about it. Some people under the auspices of, I just want to talk to you, might be, in fact, harm. He might want to harm me or my wife or y'all. So
we're into Bible, absolute truth. But if there's a problem, that's why the Second Amendment exists. So these folks at TacPack, that's what they're going to send you. If you sign up before August 1st, you can make the deadline for the next pack. And it says here that they sold out in June and July. So you might want to jump on this. It looks like a pretty good deal to me. This pack features five items worth a combined value of $115, which is pretty good. You get a free knife, which I took a good look at this one. I'll be using this one for sure. That's going to come with it. It's free. So if you're into tactical gear, then this is your group, TacPack, TacPack.com. You get the August pack if you sign up. Use the code PHIL. So you're the code.
PHIL.
PHIL. That's what you want to do to be able to get this free knife. So sign up, TacPack. Sounds like great, guys. And we look forward to getting ours.
We are religious people, Al, and just another point. And worldwide, we are being persecuted and we are being murdered on a consistent basis. So I want people to understand when they get gear for protection, that it's just that. It's not paranoia. It's just preparedness. Be prepared.
That's right.
Because how many things do you have to watch? Concerts, churches, people just come in. Well, at least we're prepared.
Yeah, and you're right. There's nothing wrong with being prepared.
This gear here helps you be prepared.
But yeah, you think about it. Anybody in any situation at some point, whether we're all pro Second Amendment, pro guns, but in any situation, for there to be justice and what's right in a bad situation, somebody has to show up armed.
That's
whether
correct.
It's the military, a police officer, someone with good intentions has to come up. I like it in America that it can be me and you.
Hopefully we'll never have to get down to that, the very
right.
But you don't have time if you're looking around saying, if I only had something, I could stop this guy who's charged in amongst godly people and is shooting up the place. Well,
you taught us.
With us, we are there to be prepared.
We were this big. You taught us that, boys, we're 30 minutes from town. There's no law enforcement anywhere around here. Well, if something goes down on this property, we're going to be the 911.
But you think in our schools, that's what happened when they made it gun-free. Well, then when someone goes in with a gun with evil intention, because it is ultimately about the heart.
I mean, duh.
You're looking around. We need somebody with a gun.
That's right.
There's no other way to combat that. I don't know why people can't see that. So I think they should take a couple teachers. Don't let anybody know who it is. And they should be armed at all times.
Minimum.
Yeah, at least two.
Minimum.
Especially in these places where they don't have, gun-friendly laws.
Because,
you're just at the mercy of whatever happens.
We have a God-given right to protect our life.
That's right.
And it was a great idea. The founding fathers got that right.
Yep.
So it's TACPAC.com. It's TACPAC, TACPAC.com. Check these guys out.
I am unashamed. What about you?
All right, so Jace, tell us what you've been up to.
I got back from Indianapolis, Indiana. I was actually right outside it in a place called Greenwood. I loved it. It was a spectacular event. Sometimes you get not depressed, or that's too strong a word, but when you start worrying about the country, or you might get down and think it's heading the wrong direction, you go do something.
The whole thing's going to hell.
Yeah, I mean, you start getting negative if you watch the news. I know nobody would do that around here, but you go to something like this, and here's what they do. Every year since 9/11, they have a community gathering, and they honor our veterans, our active military, our firemen, in that area, police officers, and first responders.
That's the ones that are being bad-mouthed the most by most people.
Yeah. And so, they have a concert. It's a festival. There's people everywhere, and they have a speaker that night. They asked me to do it, which what I found interesting.
Was it country and western singers or rappers?
You know what? It was neither. It was just neither of those two. I thought the music was actually pretty good. It was kind of... There was some Christian bands, and there was some kind of classic rock. Yeah, classic rock. Those were the two genres that I heard. But I thought it was well done. Yeah, it was very patriotic. National anthem. Look, there was a guy who sang the national anthem, and I thought it was an African-American woman because I thought, this woman can sing. And I looked out there, and it was just a little mousy white guy. And, it was incredible.
With a voice like that.
Yes, it was... It was incredible. So anyway, they told me, they were like, look, this community gathering, let's don't really talk about the Bible, because we know you're preaching at one of the churches tomorrow, and you can do that there. And so I kind of looked at them and said, yeah, okay. So of course I got up there and I thanked all those five groups, and I was like, you're the backbone of America. And I did this analogy that, these people, the military and police officers, they don't go in and try to save lives or go into a burning house based on who's in there. They don't check their belief system, their creed, their color.
Their politics.
They go in there because, one, they're doing their job, but they love what they do, and they love our country, and that's what makes our country great. And so I use that as an analogy, and I quoted 1 Corinthians 13, the definition of love. But if people weren't believers, they didn't know that was in the Bible. So, they would say, boy, that's beautiful.
So you pulled a Phil, you just quoted.
I quoted all the scriptures.
Book, chapter, verse.
No book, chapter, and verse. And then it got to the end, and I thought, what am I doing here? I'm on a podcast that is unashamed of my faith. So I just said, look, if I put my life on the line every day for other people, this would interest me, what I'm fixed to tell you. And I want to tell you that I'm not ashamed that I believe this. And I introduced Jesus. And especially when I got to the resurrection, I thought, you know, if I risk my life every day, I would look into this. Of course, after it was over, you know, the community leaders, I thought, here we go. What are they going to say? And they were like, that was fantastic. So I thought, well, we whooped them again. So the next day, I spoke at one of the churches there. The place looked like it would hold about 2,000. And I had two pretty much full crowds. You do it, you know, and then they leave and you get another.
So that was an event where they say, hold off on the sermons, and you went ahead and preached a sermon.
I preached a sermon, yeah, then, but I basically did it like, this is what I believe, and right. We share something in common. We love all people, because while they're saving people physically, I was like, Jesus saves people entirely. And so it's the same thing. And
even if you get the guy, the family, whatever, out of the burning house, which is fantastic, and you applaud it, at the same time, they still got to face the ultimate demise somewhere else down the road, you know?
But you know, when I said I'm not ashamed to, let's see, how did I say that exactly? I said I'm not ashamed that I love Jesus and that I follow him, and he's my Lord. They all clapped the crowd. I mean, there was thousands of people. This was an outside deal. I mean, as far as you could see, they all clapped. Which was the first time they clapped, you know.
Well, we talk about regions of the country. You know, I mean, Indiana, I mean, two of the best people I've ever met were from Indiana. One is the vice president, Mike Pence. You're talking about a quality
man. Well, he had spoken at this three times through the years.
Yeah.
Well, because it's Indiana.
Right, and he was the governor.
Yeah, so that's when I knew it was going to be a pretty good event, because I just looked at the past speakers. Of course, the fact that they were asking me seemed...
Did y'all meet Sammy? Remember Sammy Davis? He won the Congressional Medal of Honor from Vietnam. He was the real Forrest Gump. You know, the movie Forrest Gump, Tom Hanks, there's a segment in there where he's like he gets shot in the buttocks.
Oh, that was based on
that was based. The real guy is a guy named Sammy Davis, and he's from Indiana. And we met him at an event, but you must not have, it must have been Will that was at the event, but first time we ever met him, well, he's got some connection to West Monroe. He's been down here two or three times, and so we've met him. He was on our cruise that we did, too. But anyway, he's just, you're talking about a quality person. He's from Indiana. Some of the best people I know from Indiana.
Oh, look, I told him as I went along, as I spoke, you know. I mean, at first I was liking Indiana, but by the time I left, I was loving Indiana.
Yeah.
I mean, I could live there. They're great people.
Well, just imagine the difference between Indiana and, say, Portland, Oregon. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, there's some good people in Portland. Stu Weber, a good friend of mine, lives right outside, but man, you know, some of the stuff I've been watching going on there, they'll just beat the tar out of it.
Yeah, on the home front, about, 10, 11 maybe, we baptized people who were, before they were, they gave their life to Jesus, prostitutes this week. One prostitute, that's what she was doing for a living. One homeless guy, somebody just ran up on him when he was walking down the road, pulled over and asked him, do you need a ride? That's where it started. So they're getting him a job right now. That was one. One little young buck was in the rehab, one of the local rehabs, so he made it out over there, you know. But we baptized him over at the university, and then we went to Owens on Wednesday night, baptized some there. So Owens had a horse trough set up out there in the parking lot, which was people were driving by. Even in Louisiana, they were looking, you know, pretty good.
Well, but, you know, that's
on the home front, there were 10 or 12 gave their life to Jesus here this week. So been a good week.
It's an interesting insight into sort of what we do. Jay's described it, and all of us do this. You know, we may be some place where we're talking about our faith, preaching the gospel to thousands of people in some state or city, but then it just goes on here day to day too, like you said. And we're always amazed that people will come here and again, the show, everything about the family, and just basically turn themselves into Christ. And they're like, we saw something in y'all. We want you to guide us to what you know, which is pretty amazing when you
think about it. By the way, some guy who had been watching the podcast, he showed up. He had one of these oxygen things you carry with you, you know.
Yeah.
With the little tubes in the nose.
Yep.
So, and but he told me he'd been watching. He said, you know, I've come over here. He said, I think I want you to baptize me today, Mr. Robinson. I've been watching you on Unashamed, Blaze TV. I said, we'll do that. I said, keep your ears open. I said, I'm fixed to give a lesson on the resurrection of the dead. And I said, you carrying the oxygen thing, and I'm 73, and they've given us, you and I, about 77 on the average. I said, so we're running out of time, dude, so we better make sure we get this right, probably today. So I'm glad you came. Anyway, so we got up back up there where the baptistry was in the back, and I said, how long can you get off that oxygen? I said, we don't want to carry the apparatus. It'll short out down in here. What do you think? He said, I'll take my chances. I'll just leave it here, and I'll get it after this is over. I said, hey, go for it. So I had a Marine with me. He's my bodyguard. I had him there, you know, so he took care of the oxygen apparatus. We have taken people in wheelchairs that no one would baptize them because they said, well, you can't get out of you can't get out of the wheelchair. So, you know, just trust in the Lord and it'll be all right. Some guy come down there. He was about, I say he was crowding 90. He said, Mr. Phil? I said, yep. He had the nurses, the caretakers were with him, you know, and I walked down there and he was sitting in the rig, in the car, in a van.
Yeah.
And he said, no one will baptize me. I said, you have come to the right place. I said, we're going to baptize you, the wheelchair, what you're sitting in and everything else that's on you. I said, come on. So we went, he said, well, praise God, somebody finally said they'd do it. I said, you come to the right place, my man. So we got about two men on both sides of the wheelchair, rolled it down the boat dock over there. I said, trust me when I tell you, we're not going to let this wheelchair go, but you're going down, so's the wheelchair, but trust me, it'll be momentary and we will come out of there with you. I said, do not worry. So we baptized, he's sitting in the wheelchair.
The wheelchair
and all.
I'm wondering why I'm hearing Larry the Cable Guy's voice saying, get her done.
Well, there's been a lot of times that there was a young man that came and he came to one of the Make-A-Wish deals we do. But I didn't even know he was with him because he's usually children, you know, kids with terminal illnesses. But this guy was in his probably late 20s. So I didn't know he was a part of the deal. I mean, I knew he was in a wheelchair, but I thought he was just somebody's, you know, kin. And so this girl that was with him, she comes over to me and she says, is Mr. Phil going to be here today? And you were traveling. You weren't there that day. And I said, no, he's not going to be able to make it today. And I could tell she was disappointed. She said, well, you know, Wes wanted to talk to him, you know, just about spiritual things. I said, well, would he talk to me? And so she asked him, and he said, well, yeah, he'll talk to you. So I said, well, look, when this is over, let's get. So we sat down, talked. He told me a story. Basically, like most people, his lifestyle had led him to a point where it just destroyed his body, and he had something else wrong with it. He was already missing a leg and couldn't use one of his arms. And so I shared the gospel with him, and I said, you know, what do you want to do? And he said, well, I'd love it if you'd baptize me before I head back to Pennsylvania. He said, I don't know how much time I have left. I said, well, let's do it. So we had to get four guys, same deal. We had to lift him up out of the chair. So four of us went in the baptistry. And it reminded me of that story where the four guys let the guy down, you know, to in front of Jesus. So we baptized him, and I told him, I said, look, I don't know, Wes, how much time you got left. Because you may, you know, God may bless you with some extra time now, because now that you know about him.
Yep.
So the main thing you got to do is when you get back, because I already knew an aunt had sent us a note, see, ahead of time. And said, no, he's coming to see you guys. I didn't know about this till after. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have any relationships, destroyed every single one of them, his parents, his mom, his kid. So he gets back up there. He mended all fences. And about two weeks later, he passed away. And, you know, it's just one of those the last second. But he came all the way from Pennsylvania to talk to you and wound up talking to me.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's just amazing, you know, how God works.
If anybody in the audience, why would y'all do that? You know, why do y'all think Jesus is the one that said, go make disciples and baptize them? Well,
that's what we do.
Good enough.
That's what we do.
I have to say, this was, you know, these guys, I go to these big churches, and y'all do too, but they let you speak, which makes them a little nervous. To me, I feel like the only people that are nervous in the crowd are the leaders of the church, because they're basically handing over the reins to somebody who looks like me and you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're nervous.
They're not near as nervous to turn it over to me. Right. I'm just saying.
So after the first, my first speech, you know, because we had them coming in, the lead pastor, he come back there, and I said, well, I said, did you get over your nerves, you know? And he said, you know, I was nervous. He said, but I thought it was fantastic. And but he brought up baptism. He said, as much as I loved how you introduced Jesus, because that's basically what I did. And he said, and really, you know, we're focused on grace. He said, I thought that was the most interesting way to explain baptism I've ever heard. I've never had a preacher say that. I said, well, what do you think? And he's like, oh, I'm all for it. So what's funny was after the second time when he got up, he said that. He said, you know, Brother Jace has introduced, you know, Jesus to you. And he basically were trying to get him to confess him as Lord. And he's like, hey, and if you want to be baptized, we'll make that happen. You know, I thought it was pretty good.
So, once he elevated you to brother too,
yeah,
then you were okay.
I'm a brother. I'm in.
That's when you get that introduction. Well, we've been talking about Genesis, and we actually, you brought up baptism. We talked about last time how this idea of the flood, because we're in Genesis 6 through 10 here. We talked about water.
Mirrored that.
Yeah.
And well, that, Peter did that in 1 Peter 3.
Right. Yeah. And the idea that water is something we can't live under, and yet we can't live without either. So it's really interesting that God would use that as his way of this submissive act of basically saying we're all in. So we got through the flood. We basically got the ark back on dry ground last time. We talked about that basically things changed post-flood, and we got into a lot of different reasons why. And so, you know, God makes a covenant with Noah that really is still in effect until today, you know, that it changed our relationship with animals. He said basically he wasn't going to scourge the earth again for the sin of man, you know, like he did in that situation. And to this point, he hasn't. It's a lot of, we talked about weather and we talked about all the different ways that we have these end time judgments. I don't know if we talked about the rainbow or not last time,
no,
but that's an interesting, you know, a rainbow is basically water, you know, it has to rain, and you get that water through the prism. And we know this event was a huge event because they hadn't had a rain ever up until, you know, humanity hadn't until this time. So they'd never seen a rainbow. So when there's a rainbow, they see it for the first time. It's like God says, this is a symbol for you as you look at it as a reminder of my grace. And it's kind of interesting that the rainbow now, especially here recently, as we're doing this podcast, so this was Gay Pride Month, that the rainbow in our culture has taken on a whole nother symbol, you know, for this idea. So, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of interesting to me, but it is a reminder that it's a symbol of grace. And so I think for me personally, you can spend your time being angry all the time about cultural issues, or you can spend your time saying, it reminds me we need to reach people, you know, with the good news. So that's kind of how I saw the idea of that. So we get to this idea in Genesis 11. Genesis 10, it just kind of basically lays out the generations, because we've taken all of humanity and we've gotten it down to one family again. You have Noah, his wife, three sons, three daughter-in-laws. And so now we're repopulating the earth. And so that's what Genesis 10 does, is it basically kind of gives these offshoots of what happens. And then we run into a really interesting story.
I love this story.
In Genesis 11. Yeah, I can't wait for us to talk about it. Of course, the Tower of Babel is the story. And let me just read a couple of verses, and then we'll just kind of unpackage it, and we'll get your thoughts on it. Genesis 11 says, the whole world... And remember, not a lot of people in the world at this point. This is post-flood. The whole world had one language and a common speech. As men moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar, which would be Babylonia now, and they settled there. So, you know, you just got this crew, and they're growing, they're repopulating the earth, but it's not that many of them at this point. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks, bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. And by the way, I didn't mention this, but when God sent Noah out from the ark, he told them to go and populate the whole earth.
Yeah, in Genesis 9:1,
right.
He said, go and scatter. Two chapters later, they said, we're sitting right here.
we're planting roots. So then the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the men were building. The Lord said, if as one people speaking the same language they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them.
I think that's quite a statement.
It's a huge statement.
It tells you the power of unity, whether you're a believer or not.
Right.
Right there. I mean, when people come together, so you just think about it. To me, this explains a lot of things that happen in life where people are successful without really putting their faith and trust in God. I mean, I think this is a human key that he revealed. When people come together, I think, because I'm a big sports fan, you look at teams that have basically the same talent, you know, across the board. You say, well, what separates them? It's those ones that come together, and they talk about gelling. And I kind of used this philosophy when I was coaching Little League Baseball, because I thought that if you can limit the distractions, of course, in Little League Baseball, but first of all, you got to have a meeting with the parents. But you're basically trying to get people to buy in to something in any kind of sporting deal and then come together. And then when they do, when it says nothing's impossible, I mean, you see some amazing things from humans that unite in any front. I mean,
the current crop of humanity on planet Earth, they have a word for it. From my vantage, they call it globalism.
Mm-hmm.
They like the idea of globalism. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It's an ism, but...
Yeah, and it seems to always draw back to that, doesn't it?
Yep.
The idea...
There's a big push. We could all come together. There's still... The Tower of Babel is still around. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
That kind of mindset.
I think as Christians, we underestimate groups of people that get together, you know, for a common purpose.
Cause we
tend to think, well, since they don't have God on their side, they can't win. But people who come together for any reason and they're speaking the same language and they unify, they become a powerful force.
That is correct.
And I think this is a verse that basically states that.
I think the internet and all this high tech gadgetry, I think we have the same mindset as these people in Genesis 11. It's the same mindset. We'll all come together here,
right,
and it's going to be a global community. And if you just step back and look at it, there's a lot of graft, corruption. Yeah. I mean, it is pathetic. If you just look at it, you're maybe we do better if we are scattered. We have wars with one another all the time. That's not good. But getting everyone under one head with a smaller group of individuals that run it all, it never works out real well.
No, and you think about it strictly from a humanistic standpoint, this is why this story is not very popular. Because the idea, Jason's right, the idea is, if you're looking at it from a humanist standpoint, forget God, forget any of that. Just as humans, it's like, wait a minute, you're trying to tell me that the creator of the universe held us back? Like, you know, we were going to accomplish this, and you're saying he comes in and says, no, no, no. See, that rubs raw on this idea that humans are the top.
I think the crux of the matter is Babel, which means confusion, because there in this Genesis 11, at least it's mentioned in the Bible of all things, the Lord confused the language of the whole world. From there, right here in this place, the ancestors of old Shem. Shem, Ham, and Japheth. They get off the boat, and here they go. And you get the, by the way, you can get their genealogy. That's in Genesis 5. The last statement in Genesis 5 says, Noah was 500 years old. He became the father of Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And it goes, his lineage is traced back all the way to Seth, who came from Adam and Eve. That's Genesis 5. So all that's documented. If you want to know how long it was between Genesis 5 and Genesis 11, where we're at Babel here, you can just add up those numbers. You can have a pretty good idea, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
You know, but and the bottom line is, you say, from there the Lord scattered them over the face of the whole earth. I've always wondered, Al, how exactly he went about doing that, because all of these, there's 7,000 dialects, roughly.
Well, he confused their language.
Yeah, across the world, there's 7,000. Well, the people who study this, the ungodly, the atheists, they're looking at it like, this is a bone to be chewed. This is a kind of simplistic statements. I keep looking at it saying, how in the world did Noah, how in the world did Moses,
who wrote this,
he's going back in time at least 1,500 years, say, how in the world did he know about this confusion of the language? Where did he get the information to even write about it?
That's right.
It's pretty amazing.
Well, you're right, and because I did a little bit of research, so I looked up some different websites because I thought, what do people say now? Where does language? In other words, if you didn't believe the Bible, and you didn't believe that God is the one who said, here's where languages came from.
All I did was look at the World Book Encyclopedia. They got their point, and all they said was, it's a very complex subject.
Means what?
I don't know what in the heck I'm talking about.
That's exactly. All right, so here's one.
I don't know. What are all
these? I've done the same research.
ScientificAmerica.com. Why is it that humans speak so many languages? Good question. And why are they so unevenly spread across the planet? Here's the answer. As it turns out, we have few clear answers to these fundamental questions about how humanity communicates.
But somehow 11. Some guy named Moses knew about this that long ago and kind of expounds. And he said, well, God did it. By the way, someone has suggested, Owens. I talked to Owens. He's a great researcher, biblical researcher. I said, Owens, all these languages, what about it? He said, hard to get a fix on it, he said, but there's a lot of them. And I said, how did he scatter these people from one place? I mean, were nomadic? I mean, going crossing, you know, the plates probably were different then. It might have been you could have come across from Russia through Alaska, maybe, you know, the Bering Strait there. Someone said that when that was hooked together, nomadic tribes
somehow they got here.
Could have come.
Right.
And Owens
thinks,
at some
point, they started building boats.
You'd have had to have a good one. I mean, because they were thinking the thing was riding on the back of a turtle the entire earth for a long time.
Yeah.
This is way before all that. So
well,
I don't know,
Jace. They just thought it was flat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, flat and just a big waterfall. You fall off the edge of it. Yeah. So the bottom line is, but they were scattered. Owens thinks that if he transported some of the guys in the New Testament, meaning he could just transport people from one location.
So he thought they was being teleported.
Teleported.
Well, I mean, I think
he said it's possible.
He gets that from, you know, when Columbus came over here, when the Indians were here. So, I mean, they might have already been here or – You see, I mean, I think that doesn't bother me to read the Bible and think, well, you know, where was everyone at? Where, you know, because that is interesting that
he doesn't give the details.
Where they come from is my point.
He doesn't give the details. He just said he confused the language of the whole world. We know that's a fact because we're looking at it.
Oh, well, you
there's 7,000 dialects.
And it's incredible. When you go to a different country and you start actually looking at the way people are enunciating, I mean, it's incredible. How in the world could anyone understand that?
Right.
You know, when I was in Russia, I was like, how could you understand that? I can't learn this.
Right.
I mean, I'm like, nit, which means no. That's all I need.
Yeah.
Either bathroom. Nod, yes, or yet.
I want the one for bathroom. That's one I always figure out, whatever language is in bathroom, so I can get, you know, that's one you want to know.
Moses put a simple statement from there, at Babel there, the Lord scattered him over the face of the whole earth. That tells you who scattered him. Right. At least we have, when the people research this, say, well, there's no God. Well, this says, well, that one you say that doesn't exist, he's the one that gave them the language, confused their language, and scattered them over the whole earth.
We remember.
So out of all the places you could find that information about the 7,000 different dialects, you say, yeah, I read in the Bible, it said that God scattered them over there. They say, well, there's no God, so he couldn't have done it.
But what makes it more powerful is that you're saying, well, how did Moses know that? What I'm saying is then in Acts, here we are a couple thousand years later.
Yeah.
The very miracle that God chose to perform through Jesus' followers before Peter introduced Jesus to the world was to give them the ability to speak one language and all the different nations hear the same their language from one voice.
It's a pertinent point. Acts chapter 2, read that. Yeah. They spoke another language. There were people from all over the world, the Jews. And here, these apostles, they've just been told, you're going to start right here. You're going to be my witnesses, beginning in Jerusalem, where you are now, Judea, Samaria. And then he says this, to the ends of the earth. Well, all of a sudden, a few days later, the Holy Spirit comes upon them. They begin to speak in all these other languages. And the people from all over the world are saying, how in the world? These guys are Galileans. How is it we hear them speaking in our language? How'd they know our language?
Right.
Well, God just speeded up the whole process so that you didn't have
with
to go to a 3-year study to learn all the different dialects. He just gave them the ability. I think maybe, Jace, you come up with a good point right there.
I think the whole reason he scattered the people in Genesis 11 was to bring them together through Jesus in Acts chapter 2. I think that was
it's
the
a
original
great point.
Plan. But it also showed that he wanted you to scatter, which then gets into modern day. He doesn't want you to set up a camp on the side of the road in a church building.
Yeah.
He wants you to scatter, share Jesus, bring the world together through Jesus. That's why we have missionaries.
Jace, I'll tell the audience, I said, you know what? I didn't realize that until I just heard it right then. Said, did y'all go over all this material so you know that you wouldn't learn something at it? Jace, that's a pretty interesting point you come up with there. I think you're on to something there, dude.
Well, remember, I think so, and that's why when he discusses baptism in Galatians 3, when he said, you're all sons of God through faith, for all of you who are baptized have been clothed with Christ.
Yep.
But then he gets into there's no nationality. There's no Jew nor Greek, male nor
that's
female.
Right.
No. So he actually, if you go all the way back to Genesis 11, where he said, scatter, fill the earth. They said, no, we're going to sit right here. And he did give you an insight into humanity. They would actually pull off something spectacular. Which you think about what humans have done with the pyramids and all. To me, this sheds some light on that. When you come together as humans, you can do incredible things. We're still trying to figure out how they built the pyramids.
And by the way, when the church was going to camp out, you mentioned it last week, the last time, when the church decided it was going to camp out there and not move out, a big persecution broke out it scattered them in every direction.
Right. It's a dispersed, because they remember the last thing Jesus said.
That's one of the things of meeting in church buildings, because once people start meeting in these church buildings, you can't get them out of them.
Well, you remember Jesus' last words to the disciples before he left. He said, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. What he was saying was, this has to go out. So what did they do? They built their little camp right there in Jerusalem.
That is
true. The temple courts were right here.
That is true.
And then in Acts chapter 8, he said, no, you didn't hear me. I said out. So what he did was, a huge persecution breaks out under the hands of guess who? Paul, who was Saul at the time. Yeah. So that's how he got the church out.
Well, Jace brought it up a while ago. He said, where have you been, Jace? He said, well, I just got back from Indiana. That's kind of the picture that the New Testament, by the time you get there, it says, look, don't go to some structure and stay camped out there.
Right.
Think that's all it is to worship. You need to go. Romans 12 said, offer yourself as a living sacrifice. Go out, because the masses are not going to come inside these structures.
Oh, that's
you have to
when
go
they
to
told
them.
Me don't,
this is another way,
when
by
they
the
told
way.
Told me don't share Jesus with the community crowd. Wait till you go to the church the next day.
my response was, I was thinking the opposite.
Of course.
I mean, I was thinking the exact opposite of what you just said.
You got to be over there in the church building to preach with a microphone standing up above them, you know. By the way.
Compartmentalize. Well,
I'm doing my lessons now. I'm not standing in front of them. Like most guys got a pulpit, you know, with some kind of podium. I thought, you know,
you do need a place to put your stuff, though.
I do have that. I just said, set me up a little table up there like this table we're seated at. See this table? And I got my Bible there. And the reason I did that, I said, I don't want the people thinking I'm talking down to them.
Yeah.
I'd rather be
I like that.
I said, I'd rather be level with them.
Which is how Jesus did most of his teaching.
Well, my opening line yesterday when I was gathered with the church, my opening line was, I have an announcement. And, of course, everybody's looking, you know. I said, don't listen to everything that your preacher says. Of course, they're all looking around with the preacher. You know, he turned red.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason I said that was, I said, because God uses flawed people to make known the glorious message of his son. I was like, we all make mistakes. At some point, you've got to go find this out for yourself. You've got to go look at who Jesus is and make that transition. He's not going to do it for you. He can't do the work for you. So I think I made him nervous. But then he's like, you know, I appreciate you saying that. Because you tend to think, well, we go to church and the preacher does all the work. And we're just sitting back. You know, then you leave and go do whatever the heck you want to do.
That's why that podium and the space right behind it sort of tends to be, in some people's minds, hallowed ground.
Yeah.
But it's really not.
No, it's not. I love it at the you know, where we meet. They, I think Mac Owen put on that podium, which it's facing the speaker. So no one knows it's there except the speaker, and it says, it's not about you.
It's not about me. That's what it says. Or, it's not about me, because you personalize. And he did it for me. I was preaching at the
time.
It was a great reminder.
The first time I saw it is when I got up and spoke. I looked and I thought, okay. It kind of makes
good,
you relax.
Good point.
Yeah. I want to say this. In Genesis 11:4, I think the problem that we haven't zeroed in on is they said, come let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens. It wasn't about the heavens. It was about this. So that we may make a name for ourselves. Well, when you think about the definition of sin, according to, where's that at? James 3:16, I think, for where you have envy and selfish ambition.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There you find disorder in every evil practice. The whole problem was they wanted to make a name for themselves, not the Creator who had given them life. To me, that's the same problem with church buildings. You think of all the different denominations. The first thing people who are not believers say is, well, how come y'all can't get along? There's thousands of different churches, and sometimes they seem like they don't really even like each other.
Yeah, I know it.
Most times.
And the idea of like visiting around, like, you know, Missy and I, we've been visiting around to the community because everybody supported our family during the show. So I've been visiting all different churches. It's been a wonderful experience. And because I'm like, why don't we focus on what we agree on, which pretty much everyone agrees on, that God is our Father, Jesus is Lord, and what he did, and the Holy Spirit. So the stuff we disagree on, they're so small. But this verse made me realize why we do what we do. People want to make a name for themselves. And they'll even attach a type of denomination and try to make a name for that denomination, but they're still missing the point. They're not trying to make a name for who God is and what he did. It's still somehow, even in the religious world, somehow about them. Yep. You know, I always get bothered when I go to a church somewhere and they start telling me how they're making a name for themselves. Because I'm like, well, when are we going to get around for making a name for Jesus? You know, out there.
Yep.
I'm not worried about how big your structure is and, you know, how many people's rolling through here. If I want to know, are we reaching people for Jesus in the world? Are we scattered abroad? Because I think that's why we're here.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's exactly why he brought it back together, as we said. You're right. It's selfish pride was the first of it. And the second was just basically disobeying God. they didn't want to go and populate the earth. It's pretty evident why they wanted a tall structure. It's so that everybody would always see it, and not, you never would move away from the structure. Of course, you talk about it all the time, Dad, with what the founders of our country said. They said, look, if you ever get these big cities with the skyscrapers and pile it on top of each other, if you don't use the land that have here, you're going to have a problem.
They warned us repeatedly. By the way, 4th of July coming up, and they asked me would I speak up here on the Founding Fathers. It is interesting that, like the Founding Fathers of all, the biblical fathers, you know, you say, well, if they made a mistake, yeah, I saw where he made a mistake, so I'm not listening to him. In other words, if the founders made mistakes, then they're not worth listening to.
But all humans have made mistakes.
Everyone has not made a mistake. Yeah, I read about them, you know, and I saw where they messed up, so I'm not going to follow that teaching. It's nonsense.
Well, it's a great study to understand humanity, and it's amazing that we've talked about now just today thousands of years of human tradition back to the church to today, and it's still that same problem.
Well, at least we wrap this little thing up. All I can say is someone said, well, you know, where'd all the languages come from? A lot of confusion trying to figure out the confused languages. My answer would be, Al, God made them.
I think it's one of the stronger evidences that there is God. I love in Acts 17, you know, when Paul, a lot of what I do, sharing on the circuit, I guess, in the community, and then with individuals, I tend to always start in Acts chapter 17, because it kind of explains a lot of questions that people have. Is there a God?
Why am I here?
Where did the languages come from? You know, Paul ran up on this group of people, and they were basically worshiping an altar that said to an unknown God.
And they were the brains of the day.
Yeah, and they were going through all the different philosophies about life after death. And so he comes up there in Acts 17:24, and he's like, the God who made the world and everything in it, he's Lord of heaven and earth. So he makes that statement right off the bat, which is basically the decision. If Genesis 1:1 is true, then this whole thing is true. The whole, you know, you go through the birthplace of hunting, the languages, you know, first, I guess, the fall of man. But then you get to what we said on who Jesus is as God in the flesh. And then when you get to Acts, to the Revelation, you have this response of the people while we're waiting on Jesus to come back. But he makes this statement then in Acts 17:25, he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. He gives all men life, breath, and everything else. But then this next statement, which is what we're talking about today, from one man, he made every nation of men. Because a lot of people, they're looking at all the different nations, they're hearing all the different languages, and they're like, how could this come from one place? And instead of questioning that, because we're talking about a God who makes man from dust, a woman from a rib, planets, galaxies. Look, if he wants to confuse our language, he did it. And it's so amazing that I think only an intelligent being could pull that off. How in the evolution process and the DNA is that going to happen in that much detail?
What department in salt water fixed it so that they came up with 7,000 dialects? This is water, salt water.
Seaweed.
You say, how in the world did they
get that? I knew you were going to say that, because it is amazing. They don't pay attention to the details. I'm like, if you're going to believe that all this came from nothing, look at just the details in languages.
I'm telling you.
It had to come from something intelligent, not from just some floating gaseous mist that had nothing. The language is too detailed.
So here, listen to this. Here's the way they view it. It's an ancient question. Why so many languages?
What kind of question?
It's an ancient question.
Ancient. That
almost means as old as humanity itself.
Mm.
Explanations for why people speak so many languages are common in myths from cultures around the world. The story of the Tower of Babel in the Bible is one well-known myth.
Yeah.
And there's many others.
Yeah.
Here's the key. Let me read this. The truth is, we don't have an easy answer for why people speak so many languages. Probably because there isn't one. So in other words,
well, it just burns me up. You're calling my belief a myth, but you don't know.
You don't know. And there is no easy explanation. It's just so complicated that one day we'll figure it out.
Let me finish reading this so, based on what you said. So from one man, he made every nation of men. So here comes all your languages. That they should live on the whole earth, which is what he said. Scatter abroad.
Yep.
I'm going to bring you together 2,000 years ago, which then was, I guess,
About 4,000 years later. In the future.
Yep. And we know what happened. Just based on time and our recording here. But I love this because then he said, well, God did this. Did what? The Tower of Babel, the bringing them together in Acts 2 through Jesus, after Jesus died, which saved them, was resurrected. God did this so that men would seek him, perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. That's why I said I think he scattered us all so he could bring us all together at the foot of the cross, which is really the universal language, which is love. Everyone understands good and evil and how love interacts with those two things.
And think about it,
they all understand it.
Think about it. I don't know of any part of the world that the story of Jesus has not reached. I think it's reached worldwide.
Because think about it. No matter what language you speak, you understand good and evil, and you understand love.
Yep.
Think about that.
Yep.
Well, what Jesus did on a cross was basically good triumphing over evil because he loved you. And the resurrection, that's appealing because no matter what anybody delusionally thinks, they're going to die.
That is correct.
And they're like, I'm not worried about
it. Worldwide.
Look, people, it gets me, even in the atheistic world, because people are like, I'm not worried about it. Well, until they're fixed to die. Then they're worried about it.
Or somebody you care about.
There's a lot of money being spent on health care for people to say, I'm not worried about dying.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the number one issue. Yep. All right, so that's the perfect segue to wrap up today, because what you just talked about, Jay, is where we're going to go next. Once we now the language is people are scattered, and all of a sudden the Bible is going to take a turn when we get to Genesis 12 and start telling the story of exactly how we got to Jesus. But a lot has to happen. And there's a man named Abram first,
yep,
that we're going to talk about, because that's where the first promises come in that start pouring toward Jesus, which is really going to open up a lot of interesting stuff. It's obvious the Bible is this love story that Jace just mentioned with God and humanity. So we're going to start putting those pieces together along Abraham and some others next time. So we're glad you were here. Man, I hope you're telling others about the podcast. We're getting great feedback. Hope it's blessing your life. We'll see you next time.
Immortality is riding on this.
So we're so glad you guys were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or YouTube or Facebook, and be sure and rate us on iTunes so that other people can know about the podcast.